only in relation to the very young children. The rest of the school is not subject to daycare regulations at all. Therefore,
these are not regular, the very young ones are not regular students in the school, are they?
Well, they're there for most of them. I can't tell you the number of children fully registered in that age range. I think probably there are about 15 or so youngsters who attend full time. And then about 8 or 10 of those kids stay because their parents work.
Right. Okay.
So therefore, there are somewhere between 8 and 10 kids. At this time, it could grow, of course. But there are that number of children who stay all day. Our regulations require daycare licensing anytime you take more than 5 children full time. So the situation with Guardy Street is that they really are not unique in the state, because there are many schools who are like them, in as much as they start out by taking a few kids full time and then they expand.
Now, they did have a license at one time, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they dropped the license, as I recall. They dropped the license in part, I think, because of some of the restrictions within the license that they felt were onerous, right? They believe that they can paddle. I don't think that,
yes.
You know, that is there.
Actually, the current administration of Guardy Street is different than the former administration. The current administration very strongly believes in corporal punishment of youngsters.
All right, now corporal punishment—that sounds awful, but paddling
sound. It means that they believe they should be able to hit youngsters, various parts of their bodies, to enforce their discipline. And
is spanking many parents give corporal punishment?
Yes.
It is.
Actually, I think there are two really distinct differences between the Guardy Street School and Children's Services. One of them is the spanking issue, but I think the other one is a very strong feeling that they do not want to be regulated.
Yeah.
I think in their testimony they indicated that they
Are there some other parts of the regulation other than the non-corporal punishment part that bothers them? Do you know? Have they specifically identified any of those other parts?
No. Their testimony indicated the corporal punishment was the issue, plus a strong feeling about participating in regulated program.
Now, have you examined their use of corporal punishment at all?
We had it. The center came to our attention originally because of a complaint from parents who had their children there and had corporal punishment applied, and they didn't happen to approve of it. And we went in and discussed it with them, and they confirmed.
Well, in that instance, was it anything more than a spanking?
It was not.
Was it an excessive spanking?
I don't know that, because our rules simply say no spanking.
Well, we allow spanking in public schools. Is that right?
I understand
you
do. I think it's a district policy.
Yes.
But I think there had been, as I recall, a 75 session legislation to outlaw spanking in public schools, and I think it did not pass. I think I supported it, but I think it did not pass. And I think that it is possible in the public schools. And there are many, because I've had them talk to me, public school teachers who say they need to have the right to spank. I don't know whether they do or not. I taught in the public schools. There was in the district, one of the districts I taught, no spanking allowed, period.
Mm-hmm.
We had discipline.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Chair.
If I may respond to Senator Trell, we do have within statutes and administrative rules of most school districts, the decision is at the local level, of course, whether or not to use corporal punishment. However, if the school so chooses to use corporal punishment, unbelievably, the size of the paddle is even defined as 22 by 9 inches, etc. And the fact that an individual the principal must be in attendance at the time the very angered and hostile teacher applies the punishment, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Needless to say, I'm very much against corporal punishment. I've raised 2 children without ever having to apply my hand, let alone paddle.
Mm-hmm.
However, I have seen youngsters forced to grab their ankles in front of a classroom of children and wallop to the point that I was in danger. I felt that there, the youngster was truly in danger. The body was physically thrown from the paddle down the hallway. And years ago, 25 years ago as a nurse, far too frequently have I seen youngsters come in paddled with physical abuse so apparent that, in fact, if this amendment were adopted, of course I'm not going to be able to support it, I would work to defeat the bill.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think that's an issue, and I think we needed to bring it out, because that is one of the reasons why they don't want to. They had been at one time a certified daycare provider. They're no longer one. They chose consciously not to be one, and they do use the corporal punishment, the spanking, whatever you want to call it. I don't think they use it to excess. I don't know that they do, but even so, they insist on the right to use it. They say it's biblically condoned.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Henley.
Paddling is not the issue here. Nobody has ever said that this school does paddle. We had an indication that they included in their philosophy. Mm-hmm. And this problem arose, and I can only go on the information that I have, is that Children's Services Division did have an opportunity to look at this problem, which was whether or not they were operating a daycare center, mm-hmm. keeping a very minor number of small children for near regular hours on certain days as a convenience to their parents. And they had an opportunity, I believe, to look at that and make a rational decision on that basis only. But they didn't do it, and among the reports that I received was that there was some very heavy-handed action on the part of the Children's Services Division, including somebody from that department going to this school and going through the personal belongings of the children. For whatever reason, I have no idea. But I was definitely turned off by what sounded to me like a very heavy-handed approach. And I guess my strength in arguing for this amendment is in response to that. I simply do not think that government needs to take a philosophical stand against corporal punishment when it's not illegal and try to punish some institution because they don't happen to agree with their philosophy on it.
Okay, so further discussion? Sarah Hamlin?
Mr. Chair, I may well be mistaken, and with all due respect to Senator Hanlon, I do recall, however, probably one of the last points made in the testimony in support of the Tigard School was the fact that one of the reasons they've requested that they no longer be registered is the fact that is what the bottom line was the corporal punishment issue. I thought that came out quite clear in their testimony, and that everything else they could agree with, but it was the corporal punishment issue that they should have
a
regulation.
The management has been changed, and there's been no charge that the new management has used corporal punishment in any form, and I was kind of surprised that this became an issue, but it does shed a light on it. It gives me, long last, a reason why CDS moved in so swiftly. They have a philosophical difference with the school's function. It seemed to me that the fundamental responsibility lies with the parents. Parents who do not believe that this should be done have the choice of not sending their children there. That's where the primary responsibility lies.
Further discussion? Okay, the motion is to adopt the -4 amendments. Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Hamby?
No.
Senator Hanlon?
Aye.
Senator Isham?
Aye.
Senator Crowe?
No.
Senator Kitzhaber?
No.
Chairman McCoy?
No.
Fails.
I'd like to move the -7 amendments.
Senator McCoy moves the -7 amendments. Jim, could you speak to those again for us briefly?
Mr. Chairman, the -7 amendments were those that were requested by the West Walla Daycare Services. They were agreed to by Children's Services at the hearing. Essentially, what they do is clarify some language in the bill. Right now, the ORS chapter that's affected by this bill deals with child caring agencies and with daycare facilities. And the intent of the original legislation was to apply to child caring agencies rather than daycare facilities. This provides them clarification of that, that it does not apply to those daycare facilities, and it does that by amending ORS 418, it would delete daycare facilities certified by CSD from the application of ORS 418-205 to 418-325. It also includes the -6 amendments that were requested by legislative council, so that if this amendment is adopted, there's no need to take action on the -6 amendments.
Okay. Discussion on Senator McCoy's motion? Heard Mr. Havel's explanations or objection? We've adopted the 7 and 8 amendments then.
How about moving the bill?
Senator amended House Bill 2274 to the floor. Goes to the floor?
Yes, amended.
As with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
I'll vote for the bill if I don't have to carry it.
Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Senator Hanlon?
No.
Senator Isham?
Maybe. Aye.
Senator Trow?
Aye.
Senator Kitzhaber?
Aye.
Chairman McCoy?
Aye.
Can't seem to get rid of the gavel here. Trying to give it away.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, the committee has before it a copy of House Bill 2652 as amended by the House Amendments Hand Engrossed. Material from the physician's drug manual relating to sodium pentobarbital relating to House Bill 2652. A letter from CODA. And other material relating to the issue of potential for abuse in House Bill 2652. A letter from Greg Betts of the Humane Society of the Willamette Valley relating to House Bill 2652. A letter from Bruce Hamovitz from the Humane Society of Central Oregon relating to House Bill 2652. A letter from Don Walker addressed to Milt Schofield relating to the intention of Senate Bill 636. I think everything else has already been written.
Okay. Would like to just put in record that we'll have ask Mr. Havel to integrate those two sets of amendments on 2274 that we just passed. Okay. We'll have a work session on 2527.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2527 would define a residential consumer of electrical or natural gas services. It would prohibit the termination of electrical or natural gas services when termination would endanger the health of the consumer at any time rather than just during the winter season. It would require written notice 15 days before termination and good faith attempt at personal notice 72 hours before termination and at a time of actual termination. It would require the Public Utility Commissioner of Oregon to adopt rules to require the utility to establish service whether or not the residential consumer has paid the entire outstanding. Mr. Chairman, this measure relates to. I'm not looking at the dash 8. This measure relates to the shutoff of natural gas.
Okay.
It has a subsequent referral to Energy and Environment Committee. I knew as I got halfway into that it wasn't right.
Is it ready to go to energy?
The measure has no fiscal impact. You'll recall that Representative Bauman at the previous hearing did recommend consideration of an amendment. The chair directed the current chair to work with staff on the possibility of an amendment, and I believe you might have some additional observations on that. Other than that, there are no amendments pending.
Well, Mr. Chairman, who's the chairman right now?
You.
Oh, okay. I think that the bill, as it came over from the House, is certainly a step in the right direction. I guess my concern, after checking the floor and with various parties, is I'm afraid that if we add the additional amendment, although I personally don't have any problem with it, we're going to endanger the bill, which I think would be a mistake. I think the bill does have a lot to offer, so I guess my recommendation would be to move the bill as, you know, as we received it.
So moved, Mr. Chairman. Does it go to trade, yes, or to environment?
I would be happy to include in the, since we have two members of yes. that committee here, move that we send a letter to the President asking that subsequent referral be rescinded.
Fine.
Okay, so Senator Trobe moves House Bill 2527 to the desk with a letter to the President requesting that the subsequent referral to environment and energy be rescinded.
One could even say in the letter that the chairman of that committee recommends it.
Yes, I will.
Yes. Plus one other member.
Yeah, right. Plus one other member.
Mr. Chairman.
Discussion?
Yes. You sure you don't want to? Is this what you want?
Yeah, we discussed that with the various parties involved, okay. and they're comfortable. Mr. Hamill?
Mr. Chairman, is it the understanding of this committee, or does the committee wish to make any statement on record regarding the deposit and the reasonable payment plan?
Well, I can tell you what my sense is, and I don't think I can speak for the entire committee, but my sense is that that 4 months for partial payment is a reasonable time limit. We discussed that with Mr. Lobdell as well, I believe, last mm-hmm. week. Mm-hmm.
And I think the testimony also.
Is there further discussion? Quick call the roll.
Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Senator Hanlon?
Aye.
Senator Eisenhower?
Aye.
Senator McCoy?
Aye.
Senator Trow?
Aye.
Chairman Kitzhoffer?
Aye. Word. Senate Bill 156.
Bill 156 relating to the payment of costs of emergency holds. The bill has no subsequent referral. The fiscal impact statement has not been received. Amendments have been proposed by the Mental Health Division and have been proposed by the Oregon Association of Hospitals. The Oregon Association of Hospitals amendment clarifies the method of giving prior approval. You have in your folders LC Draft 156-1, which is the amendment, is a combination of the amendments proposed by the Mental Health Division and the amendments proposed by the Oregon Association of Hospitals. The bill as amended would...
by which set?
By 156-1, as amended by the combination of both of them, would give the community mental health program director or designee the power to give prior approval for care, custody, and treatment of a allegedly mentally ill person before the county became responsible for the payment for the care, custody, and treatment. And the bill would also provide that the county in which the person is found would be the county of residence. I believe that June Dunn of Mental Health Services West requested to be able to speak to the committee on the bill to respond to the questions that were raised at the previous hearing.
Okay. Is that individual here?
Please state your name for the record.
Oh, I'll start. I'll just go quickly. I'm Gretchen Kafori, lobbying with the Mental Health Centers in Portland. And a number of issues were raised at the hearing about what the impact would be on the community residents, and would in fact the cost decisions be made over clinical decisions? And I think it is an important bill, and so I thought June Dunn, who runs the Westside Mental Health Clinic in Portland, could address some of those issues for you.
Just put your name on the tape for us, please.
I'm June Dunn, and I'm the director of Mental Health Services West, which is the agency that is in downtown Portland area. We do believe strongly that the notion of prior approval is an important and good principle. It assures that mental health money will be used for mental health care, and it allows for early intervention to an appropriate level of care, and it assures the application of an equal standard of care to those people that require mental health care. We find some problems with the way this bill is stated in regard to that prior approval issue and also in regard to the residents. The issue of residents concerns us most for Multnomah County. It's our belief that this will increase the cost to Multnomah County, both the staffing costs of being available to respond to prior approval and the costs related to persons who residents can't be established for or situations in which we can't reach another county for prior approval. So that I think what we would like, as I really represent the four directors of the four quadrants. We've discussed this. We were very concerned about getting prior approval, but with the residency issue added to the bill, we're concerned that the savings may be used up in the residential problems. We think that we also need a little more study in regard to liability issues. Who will be the designee that makes decisions about whether a person can receive care or not? If it clearly is the fact that giving prior approval for accepting the cost of care does not make an agency liable for the actual care. In other words, if a person is presenting at the hospital, mental health division would want prior approval to say the person is mentally ill or not, but the physician would have other options in terms of placing holds on persons. And I think I listened to your tape, and I think Senator Hamby brought up the issue of there are other places that payment can be forthcoming for people that need emergency holds. Our concern as a mental health person, obviously, is that our mental health money be spent on the priority one patients that you have indicated the state should care for. And as you heard from Robert Kalk, in Multnomah County, the number of holds have been rising dramatically in Multnomah County, while the actual number of commitments have been decreasing. So that it seems fairly clear that holds are being placed on people that are not legitimately persons who need commitment. And that amount of money that's been spent on that has made dramatic impact on our programs. An example is our program was funded at a certain level, and about 2 months ago we had $53,000 taken back from our budget to meet involuntary commitment costs in Multnomah County, so that cost factor is of great concern to us. We would recommend that there be further study, a cost impact study, and that if the bill is to be passed, that there be some method by which the numbers of people that Multnomah County does need to serve will clearly get some additional compensation. I think it's quite clear that with the hospital shift, there will be new patients at Damish. There seemed to be, you heard Dave Edwards testify that they received rather large bills from Multnomah County and that they would rather have people transferred to Oregon State. And yet we know that in the middle of the night at Multnomah County, we can't make an arrangement to send someone to Oregon State to save costs. So I think that there needs to be a thorough study of the cost.
So are you saying you'd rather have us not adopt, not pass the bill?
If the residence requirement remains as it is, we would really like a statement about that.
Senator Trump?
Is this the official view from Multnomah County or county officials, or is
it? Well, I feel that I shouldn't speak for Robert Kalk. However, I did talk with him about this after his testimony, because I listened to your tape.
He testified in favor, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, that's what I was.
And he did have his staff review what the cost to Multnomah County might be, and called me back and said that he had a tentative figure of approximately $100,000 and that he was concerned about that issue and thought perhaps it should be studied further.
Was that a biennial figure or was it a yearly figure?
I think it was an annual figure.
Annual figure, mm-hmm. That's what I think.
I think what the problem was that everyone agrees something needs to be done about the prior authorization. I mean, the system is out of control and all these people are getting held without any control over the system. And in their zeal to get something for prior authorization, the county hadn't clearly studied what the impacts of the removal of the residency issue, because that was not in their first testimony. He didn't say that they thought that would be a big problem, and then this new figure that June mentioned was what they developed just in the last week.
I think the county would be delighted if there were some assurances that the cost factors related to residency could be appropriately handled, but we just don't see the way it's written now as giving us any assurance that will be the case.
Now, Mr. Chairman, I had some real reservations about part of this bill anyway, so I think we ought to just put it in the back of the book.
I did too.
Somebody study it.
I do understand that that there will be some further study of the commitment law, and we'd like very much to participate with some interim study of how that could be handled, because costs certainly are in that process.
Sir Hammond?
Only a very brief comment. I cannot support the bill, but my concern, too, speaking of an interim study, however, it's the magnitude that we have a kind of interim study, but my concern with the media reports of yesterday's adult male attempting suicide and the cheers and screams of encouragement brought me to the point of absolute nausea. I thought it was Shades of New York or
I
cannot believe that Portland, Oregon or Oregon has reached that point.
Where was this?
Yesterday before?
At the Fund Center. A man was on the bridge waiting, despondent, and commented that he wanted to jump and that no one cared about it. And crowds down at the Fund Center were clapping and cheering and saying,
cheering
jump.
On to jump.
It was a couple of days after they cheered.
Yeah, after they cheered the police.
Right.
He did jump, but he was all right.
I would like to say, though, that I think community-based care is an important concept, and that we really do have a system of care in place in Multnomah County that can begin to respond very very quickly to that. The problems we have, of course, are cost. We believe that we can keep a large number of people out of the hospital in a better quality of life, and we can provide a protective environment around that group of people with the appropriate cost transfer from hospital care to community, we've been testifying on that elsewhere. But I wouldn't want people to get discouraged about the fact that that it is necessary to have a variety of people in the community, and what we need is quick response to problems like that.
And then look to how we might help the mentally ill that cheered.
Yes, that's
further
true.
Question, Mr. Havel?
Education is very important.
I've got a question, Mr. Chair. If it's the desire of the committee to have an interim study, staff could write a letter under the chair's signature for the president's office that they're now looking at the interim activities. And it might be appropriate at that point to request sure. that be included on an agenda.
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. It seems to me that all the committees I'm in are talking about interim studies. We're going to be the most active, vigorous interim that we've had in a long time studying everything. That's good.
Is there an objection to that suggestion that we sent?
Mr. Chair, I don't think we were intending that there be an interim committee specifically
no,
on
no,
this.
No.
House Judiciary Committee, as part of their workload, will be looking at the definition of mentally ill, so that will tie in. But I, you know, maybe this committee could have that as part of it. Is that what you're saying, as part of its workload?
Yes,
that's correct.
They have to approve.
Well, not this committee. Whatever the leadership decides is appropriate format for the interim, that it be part of the agenda for.
He develops that too, what the agenda is.
No, he just suggested.
I think we all understand what the intent is.
Thank you.